Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Counteroffensive? What counteroffensive? Was Ukraine's recent attack along five sections of the front merely an expensive PR stunt? It would seem so. Washington has no interest in seeing this conflict end. This bodes badly for Ukraine and Ukrainians. Crosstalking public relations as war, I'm joined by my guest, Alexander Eitan in St. Petersburg. He is a senior lecturer at St. Petersburg State Institute of Technology. In Tulsa, we have Jeremy Kuzmatov. He is a managing editor of Covert Action magazine. And in Finland, we cross to Markku Siira. He is a Finnish political blogger and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alexander, I will go to you first. You have a tender age. You're a bit younger than the rest of us here. But, you know, watching what's going on in Ukraine, particularly with the destruction of this dam, we don't know exactly what happened, but I think we can presume, considering we have other incidents of a similar kind over the last 15 months. It reminds me, growing up, when I was told by the U.S. military that we had to destroy the village to save the village. It sounds very much like the same thing going on now. The Ukraine's Western partners are encouraging Ukraine to destroy their own country to, I guess, save the country. Your thoughts, Alexander.
Well, and you mentioned age. So if you look at what people are saying on social media like Reddit, you have this very confusing situation where they say, oh, all of Ukraine's 1991 borders are Ukraine, and those are their people. But then they're very happy that these people are now suffering their entire cities and villages being flooded by the effects of this dam being destroyed. So on the one hand, they're Ukrainians, and they belong to Ukraine. On the other hand, they're Russian enemies and deserve to be punished. So it's quite confusing. They're trying to, I don't know how these folks don't see the fact that none of this lines up logically, but it's all just very ideological. So none of it really needs to make any kind of sense. It's all an emotional game. And this also plays into the media strategy that the U.S. and Western partners are using, which is that all of it is logically complete nonsense. None of the things that they say make any sense. But it's all emotionally driven. So they show some pictures or make some claims, and then everyone is expected to have a certain emotional response to what they're reporting. But that's apparently working out well enough for younger generations, for Zoomers, millennials, and apparently upwards of half of baby boomers and Generation X. So it's kind of disappointing that people aren't being more critical in their thinking and analysis in Western countries.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, I thought it wasn't that long ago. Now we don't have to go back in history looking at the drumbeat to war in Iraq, you know, and after what, we will never let that happen again. We learned our lesson, you know, we'll be more skeptical. This is far, far worse than it was to the drumbeat to war in Iraq. Far, far worse, because there's no dissent allowed. Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen repeatedly, I guess people seem to fall for it every time, you know, but with Assad and Syria, they believe the propaganda about that. Gaddafi, you have even alternative media, you know, who are, you know, demonizing these kind of leaders, whether it's Gaddafi, Assad, Putin. And it's a similar strategy that was used back in the Cold War with, you know, Fidel Castro, when the U.S. was carrying out terrorist activity on Cuba. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing terrorist activity, the blowing up pipeline, bombing the irrigation, you know, this dam. I mean, that was a crime for which Nazi leaders were prosecuted and hung at Nuremberg. And this is really just great, high-level war crime we're seeing. And, yeah, this is sad, as he's pointing out, that so many in the American public are going along with this. And I was at, even like people on the left, you know, live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the Woody Guthrie Center, you know, this left-wing icon, Woody Guthrie, his center honored Pussy Riot. And I went to this Russian band that urinates on stage on Putin, and they had all these Stand With Ukraine T-shirts they were handing out to the crowd, and I was going to vomit. I was at the event.
Well, you know, we'll have to do a separate program on how the left has become pro-war. In my lifetime, I remember the anti-war movement as a child during the winding up of the Vietnam War. That's a topic for another day. Marco, let me go to you in Finland here. One of the most interesting news events of the last cycle is that there are reports, nothing concrete here, that countries like Poland may send their own troops there, and a coalition of the willing, which you've heard that phrase before. We know how that all worked out here. I mean, this is an intentional escalation here. And because Russia has not responded up the escalation ladder, doesn't mean it won't in the future. This is extremely dangerous because, from a Russian point of view, Poland is a NATO country. So, I mean, you know, they're forcing an Article 5, but by doing that, they're ignoring Article 1 of the NATO treaty, not to start wars. Go ahead, Marco, in Finland.
Yes, I think this is going to escalate. And now that Finland is in the NATO camp, we have already seen that in Finnish media, there have been reports coming, and politicians have been saying that, okay, this was Russia's doing and it's all Russia's fault. And I don't know how this goes, but now even Zelensky has declared war on Twitter, against Twitter. And so this will go to very dire direction.
Yeah, well,
especially that NATO camp is going to have their emergency meeting today, or something about the dam casualties, etc. But I think they are gathering together to try to achieve a consensus of what to do next and how to go against Russia next.
You know, it's very interesting, Alexander. I remember a few years ago doing—I don't remember why we were doing a program on Iraq, and there was a CIA apologist on defending American occupation of Iraq. And I asked him a very simple question. I said, don't you think the American government has helped Iraq enough after all of this? I think you can ask the same question. Have we helped the Ukrainians enough? I mean, because what we see is, you know, you look at the demographic decline of the country, it's dramatic. No country like it in modern history has seen such a dramatic decline in demographics. We have, it's completely on lifeline with the West and running its economy and whatnot, paying pensions and whatnot. And now you destroy the livelihoods of tens of thousands of farmers in the southern part of Ukraine. I mean, I can't see how this is helping Ukraine. Alexander.
Well, Ukraine is being used as a tool, obviously, and they're fully willing to sacrifice it. I suppose on some level it makes strategic sense given that Ukraine has been a part of Russia for centuries. So in some way it's just using a part of Russia against Russia. So they don't care what the casualties are, the damage and loss of life is, because, well, it's a good deal for them, as Senator Lindsey Graham has pointed out and other war hawks in the Senate and the House. So for them, it's a great deal. And the other issue is apparently the push for war from some of the elites in Washington who apparently would like to start World War III with Russia and China, apparently simultaneously. They're apparently not losing steam here. So the push for war continues, and I think they're on a schedule here, because the way economically everything is going and militarily on the ground in the Ukraine, they have to start the war sooner rather than later, because the longer this goes on, the weaker the West position is going to be. So a year ago, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, was going on Fox News, and yep, he was asked, well, how long, well, you know, is the West going to win the economic war against Russia? And he immediately said, oh, 100% we're going to beat Russia economically. Well, here we are a year away from that prediction, very, very confident prediction. And here Russia's standing just fine. China is there backing up Russia economically. And there's multiple countries that are starting to leave the U.S. orbit. So things aren't looking very good for the West strategically. They're running out of time, and it looks worse and worse for them as we go forward.
You know, Jeremy, reflect upon that, because Alexander is absolutely right, I think, because we see the Nord Stream, we see the destruction of this dam here. I mean, this is the kind of it's kind of terrorist activity, but it's on an escalation ladder here. They're preparing for the next big thing, a dirty bomb, because Alexander is right. I mean, there's no way NATO is going to win this war in a conventional sense. Now, I mean, you can go up the ladder to nuclear weapons, obviously, but, you know, sending all the trinkets and junk that the West hasn't used in their warehouses is being sent to Ukraine. They don't know how to use it. A lot of it doesn't work. A lot of it's dangerous, actually, here. So they need a PR thing. That's why I'm calling this program, you know, it's war is PR, because this is the only thing that they can keep people's attention and motivation. Jeremy.
Yeah, I think part of their aim is just to keep the war going, bog Russia in Ukraine like they did in Afghanistan. I think the blueprint is Afghanistan in the 80s, where, you know, Brzezinski came out and said the goal had been to induce the Russians Vietnam, you know, by supporting the Mujahideen, drawing them into the Afghan trap, as Brzezinski called it. And I think that's been their strategy in Ukraine. But then they can ratchet up the sanctions, you know, demonize Russia. That's why we've seen this intense information war, demonization of Putin, and that could justify ratcheting up sanctions. And they believe that the sanction would cripple the Russian economy, but they miscalculated, because Putin has responded to the sanction since their inception in 2012 through a number of methods, including drawing closer to China, developing the Eurasian Union, import substitution, investing in local industry, technology. So the Russian had very, very low support, and some Russian never even heard of him. So, yeah, I agree. The strategy this time is not working. In Afghanistan, the 80s, it did succeed in bleeding the Soviet Union, but Brzezinski could brag later about destroying the Soviet Empire. But I think things have changed this time.
Yeah,
I think you're right
on a lot of those points here. But unlike the Afghan episode, the West is suffering the consequences of its own policies here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on public relations as war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing public relations as war. Okay, let's go back to Marku in Finland. Marku, what we've discussed so far on this program is very grim, it's very dark, and it's very dangerous. But your country just joined NATO. Why?
Yes. I think Finland always does things that hinder the progress and are bad to the people. But this was the ultimate cock-up or something like that, because we were a neutral country and enjoyed international prestige of being one. Like a Switzerland of Scandinavia or something. And then our powers that be, who have behind the scenes always wanted to be in the Western center of power, they agreed with Biden administration that they would join NATO finally. And now we are in open enmity against Russia. So it's crazy.
Yeah, but it seems to me that you're sacrificing your security by joining the Western bloc, which, you know, Alexander, you know, people talk about NATO all the time as a military alliance. And all that. I mean, I think it's far more a PR operation, okay, more than anything else. And you've already enumerated on a number of things here. The ICC, the lawfare element that's being thrown at it. We have the grain deal through the Black Sea, which falling apart, which is the Ukrainians intentionally wanted to fall apart, again, against their own people, again, and the West will pay for it, and the global South certainly does here. This is all emotions. It's all a diversion from what's actually happening on the ground, which is really quite grim for the Ukrainians, okay? I mean, I've seen a number of these films when they're forcing young men into the military. It's really, really grim and brutal here. But that's not seen in the West. And what's different from the episode in Afghanistan is that the West is actually feeling the impact of their own sanctions against Russia. And Russia, as you've pointed out, I live here, you live here. There's no crisis when it comes to the economy. Alexander.
I think it's actually not that negative as it may seem. So obviously there's a lot of bad stuff happening in Europe, and short term there's a lot of problems, but long term I'm feeling very optimistic actually. So you're seeing the effects of what's going on now play out. We have Blinken going over to Saudi Arabia for an emergency meeting basically with the Saudis, who are supposed to be American allies. And basically the next day the Saudis are making deals with the Russians. So they're obviously not interested in whatever they heard from Blinken. And it's kind of catastrophic the way the U.S. is so rapidly losing influence on the world stage. And this is a very good thing for the peoples of Western Europe and the peoples of America who are under the thumb of this regime in Washington and their vassals in Brussels. So the quicker these guys lose influence, the better for everybody. And I think a lot of people who watch your program, I would say perhaps they're looking to be informed, but I think they're all pretty well informed anyway. So perhaps another reason would be entertainment. Everybody's got to have a hobby. But on some level, a lot of people that I talk to in the West, they're just wondering, what do we do? And to some extent, there's not much that we can do. We're just individual people, and this train wreck on some level is just going to continue barreling forward, and we don't have much influence on it. But on the other hand, there are elected officials who get voted into offices, and in some countries, the voting system does work to one degree or another. So I would tell people who are interested in what they can do to stop writing comments on Facebook and social media that no one cares about, and instead write impolite but professional emails to their local elected officials and harangue them to get them to do what they are supposed to do and to do the right thing.
But Alexandra, you have, Sandy Cortez, AOC, she came to Washington on an anti-war platform and she votes for every single defense bill. Okay, I'm tired of these people here. They're not the solution, they're the problem. Jeremy, I want to go back to you and something that has been discussed here. Alexandra's onto a lot of really good things here, because it seems to me that the West really wants to push a timeline here. No ceasefire, of course they don't. They want to keep it going, but they need something. What this is all about, regime change in Russia, and they're not getting anywhere in that regard right now. So they may take some very bold steps. I don't know what they are, but Victoria Nuland is a risk taker. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I would have to agree with that assessment. Yeah, it was telegraphed in a RAND Corporation report, Unbalancing Russia. They basically outlined their strategy and the goal of regime change. And I think, Biden said at one point, Putin has to go. And I would agree with you. These are wild cards. These people are, I think they may be mentally imbalanced and they could do anything. I mean, I think one of their expertise is setting up black flag operations where they're going to commit some horrendous atrocity and blame the Russians. Although at this point, it's hard to believe, and they've accused the Russians so many times of bombing themselves and sabotaging their own pipeline, and then they come out 6 months later, and now they're saying, the New York Times at least is reporting that the Ukrainians are behind it, even though it's probably the CIA or other Western governments. So I don't know how many times the public will believe these lies. So maybe that strategy is a bit worn, but they seem to keep doing that, and they're stepping it up, like with this dam. They're trying to blame Russia, and that could be a pretext for more escalation. So I think this right now, the formula, these kind of black flags, we saw what they did in Syria with the chemical weapons. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact that it's very unlikely Assad used chemical weapons on his own people. The scientific studies show that they were coming from rebel territory. In some cases, there were no actual chemical attacks. There were conventional attacks, and the air looked a certain way to make it look like or the scene was staged. So they'll probably follow that Syria blueprint. And, yeah, this could lead to world or nuclear war potentially.
Well, exactly. And, Marco, one of the things that's, it's again, terrifying is that there's no trust here. There's no reason for the Russians to trust anything coming out of Brussels, London, Washington, even Warsaw, which it seems like the Poles have a disproportionate influence now. I mean, this is what's really dangerous here is because, you know, there was an idea about the indivisibility of security. We had that through the Helsinki process here. These elites have no idea what that means, okay? And there will be no peace in Europe until Russia has security guarantees. Everybody's talking about Ukraine security guarantees, but everyone has to have security guarantees. Why have we drifted so far away from that thinking when that type of thinking kept the peace during the Cold War?
Yeah. Well, I think it's been a long-planned thing. For example, now there's this group of non-US NATO countries who are willing to launch some sort of military operations in Ukraine, even if NATO rejects the demands of security guarantees for Ukraine. And I think this is what some Rumsfeld or some other old character said when he spoke about old Europe and new Europe. And what Biden administration thinks that it consists of this new Europe is Finland, Poland, and the Baltic states. All these states willing to go against Russia and not necessarily what Western Europeans want.
Yeah, but I think that's all nice and fine, but why would the Russians see there's any kind of difference, okay, whatsoever? I mean, Finland's a member of NATO, okay? So, I mean, if the Poles roll across the border, well, then the Russians will say, well, you're part of NATO, they're part of NATO. I mean, it's all fair game. I mean, the insanity of Finland joining the alliance now, I hope future historians will explain it, but maybe, gentlemen, it won't be historians that will explain anything. It'll be psychologists, because this is all insane. Marku, please respond.
Yes, I think this is a worst scenario we are heading. But I hope that once Russia advances and defeats the Ukrainian forces so utterly this summer that it's no longer possible to keep up this Western PR stunts and this whole narrative going, and maybe then people will wake up and kind of realize that they have been deceived.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Alexander, I'm very, very pessimistic about that because of the media space that is so closed. I mean, this program, the station I work at, we were banned, on YouTube. We were actually quite popular on YouTube. This program was really popular on YouTube. That's why it was taken out, okay? We have Tucker Carlson. He was taken out. His last missive on Twitter echoes very much what, gentlemen, we're saying on this program. Alexander.
Right. Well, I think that the leaders in the West are in an echo chamber, and mm-hmm. what seems insane to us is actually very logical to them because they're so restricted in the information that they're getting. Like what Larry Fink was thinking a year ago, that this would be an easy economic war against Russia, and a lot of people on the ground who apparently thought that somehow Ukraine would be able to defeat Russia militarily, these are not very logical thoughts. And you have all these White House staff who are continuing to pursue these failed strategies. So these guys are just pushing forward, and they're not going to listen to any kind of other rational information. Just like RT has been blocked off of YouTube, any kind of alternative information is blocked out of governance as well. Anybody who voices anything against the main line is going to get fired.
Yep.
So they've put themselves into their own predicament where they literally just don't know what's going on, and I don't think they're going to find their way out of that.
Yeah, well, gentlemen, what's really interesting is that when this all comes crashing down, they're not going to understand why. When the empire comes to an end, it'll be the American people that'll hear about it last. Unfortunately for them, that's the way things are moving. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Tulsa, St. Petersburg, and in Finland. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.